Hello, welcome to the exclusive first patron-only mini-episode. I'm your host, Lainey, and this is the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I want to give y'all an idea of how the mini-episode will be formatted. I will often discuss cases that I've been following closely that may not have a lot of resolution to them. This could be because they are fairly new, or it hasn't even gone to trial. If you follow us on Facebook, you've probably seen several of my posts regarding the disappearance of 19-year-old Sarah Stern. I first heard about her disappearance through a vlogger I follow on YouTube. His name is Julian Salamita. If you haven't heard of him, he's the boyfriend of Uber YouTube famous star Jenna Marbles. Sarah was a part of the Dink Fam, which is what fans of the couple are called. A bunch of followers retweeted that Sarah had gone missing, and both Jenna and Julian posted a heartfelt message on YouTube, hoping that she was okay. Unfortunately, she wasn't. Okay, on to the show. Sarah Stern was last seen alive at 11:45 p.m. on Friday, December 2nd, 2016, in Neptune City, New Jersey. Her car was found unoccupied and still running on the Route 35 bridge around 2:45 a.m. Saturday, December 3rd. At first, it was believed that she may have run away after withdrawing a large sum of money from her bank account, approximately $7,000. Police began to search the Shark River. It flows under the Route 35 bridge, looking for any signs of Sarah. Some began to fear that she may have taken her own life. Her family refused to believe that this was the case. Sarah was happy, in college, and looking forward to a big trip to Amsterdam for the world's largest online video conference, VidCon. It was set to take place in April of 2017. The circumstances surrounding her disappearance confused many of her friends, family, and law enforcement. A Facebook page was set up to assist in locating Sarah and to help spread the word of her disappearance nationwide. Sarah's father, Michael, held on to the hope that his daughter would be found alive. He organized searches, and friends of his daughter joined in. Two friends in particular were considered close friends of hers and were also present during the searches: Liam McAtasney and Preston Taylor. Preston was even Sarah's date to junior prom. However, their intentions for participating in the searches and even going to the Stern home to be with the family were more sinister than anyone could imagine. The search for Sarah would continue until a break came in late January. A mutual friend of Liam and Preston, known in court documents as AC, contacted Crime Stoppers, indicating he had information related to her disappearance. The information he shared would change the course of the investigation from a missing persons case to an intentional homicide. I will now play the audio for Preston Taylor's February 7th detention hearing. The prosecutor is going to cover the timeline of events starting from December 2nd and ending February 1st. Here it is.
Your Honor, this defendant, after Miranda, gave a statement indicating that he was aware that his roommate at the time, the co-defendant in this case, committed the crime of murder. He was also aware that his roommate, the co-defendant in this case, had planned out the execution of this little girl for at least 6 months prior to the crimes commencing. On the date in question, he received a phone call from his roommate indicating, "I'm at the bank, I'm going to do it now, I'm going to take her out." According to this defendant's statement, taking her out meant to strangle her. He was at work, he returned from work, and was home in the residence that the two men shared together. The co-defendant came home and said, "Dude, I did it, we'll go there later, but I need you to go there now and hide her body from the house and look for my cell phone, which I left there." At some point after, his roommate, the co-defendant in this case, requested him to go to the victim's home. He did. He went to the victim's home. He He found her body. He looked through the house for his co-defendant's cell phone. He then took her body, removed it from the residence, and left it under a bush. He left the residence without the phone, went back to his home that he shared with the co-defendant. His co-defendant, who had been at work, came home, asked him, "Did you do it?" He said, "Yes, but I did not find the phone." A second trip back to the residence by the co-defendant, where the co-defendant continued to look for his phone. They had a conversation. At some point, it was determined that both of the gentlemen would go back to the victim's residence to remove, at this point, it's believed, money, as well as the victim's body from the backyard. A second trip at approximately 10:30 at night after the co-defendant got off of work, returned both men to Sarah's home, where they entered the house, or one of them entered the house. This defendant said, "My job was to stand outside and make sure everything was good." He stood outside, waited for his co-defendant to leave, took an item that was given to him by the co-defendant. They returned to their cars, left items by a fence, then went back and got Sarah's body that had been, at this point, lying outside for approximately 8 hours. Sarah was then thrown over a fence, placed in her own motor vehicle that the co-defendant had got from her driveway, and both men left, this defendant in his own car, where they had agreed to meet at the Belmar Bridge. This defendant appeared at the Belmar Bridge, parked his car behind Sarah's, and helped his co-defendant throw the body over into the water.
The search for Sarah's body is ongoing, and a trial date has not yet been set for both of the men. I will keep you updated as events unfold. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this first mini episode. Let me know what you think. Until next time.